Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Studios, high atop the San Francisco skyline, this is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
All right, good to be with you. Podcast version only today. Little A's baseball. Oakland A's at the Boston Red Sox tonight, which means we're not on the air this Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. As a matter of fact, I'm even going to be bumped on Friday when the series leaves Boston and heads on down to Tampa Bay. We'll have a full four-hour show for you on Thursday, and it's a good thing. There's an awful lot going on in sports to talk about. Got the Warriors tonight. Sharks got a closeout game. We got Giants and A's baseball to talk about. We got an MVP back in the building, and we'll get to all of that in just a little bit. But the reason why we are here, and one of the biggest reasons why I came in this Monday to do this podcast, is because last night we got episode 3 entitled Oathbreaker, Game of Thrones. By popular demand, we give it to you when you ask for it. Spoilers are coming. It's time for post-Game of Thrones.
Dragons do not do well in captivity.
How do you know this?
That's what I do. I drink, and I know things.
Now,
my girl has been given a second chance.
On the Damon Bruce Show.
There will not be a third.
It's post-game.
The real war is between the living and the dead.
Of Thrones.
And make no mistake, the dead are coming.
You know, it's kind of perfect that it ends with the gasping of air, because that's where we begin in this episode. Jon Snow is alive. The Onion Knight can't believe it. Melisandre's pretty blown away by the whole thing. And Jon Snow is like, I can't believe they stabbed me to death. Like, he's got regrets. Like, he was wondering, like, what did I do so wrong? So he's coming to grips with the fact that his men chose to murder him over letting the Wildings go through the wall, which is basically against 1,000 years of the Night Watch's code. So the Red Witch basically says, the Lord let you come back for a reason. Stannis wasn't the one. So all of the visions that she had in the Cauldron of Fire were apparently about Jon Snow. He walks out to the Night's Watch. They're all shocked. And his couple boys that he has left give him a little dap. But that's where the series begins, or the episode begins, at the wall. We then get Sam and Gilly for the very first time this season. They're on a boat. And, of course, he's seasick. They're heading to Old Town. He is going to study to become a maester. We knew that from last season, but we don't see him until this episode, three episodes into this season. He's going to drop Gilly off at his home. Of course, his father's famous for not liking him. He says his mom and sister are cool. She'll like it with them. Let's be completely honest here. For two seasons now, Sam is no longer providing comic relief. I like him as a character, but he's sort of providing a dead spot in the show. And his reintroduction into this season felt like a dead spot in this episode. It was one of the least interesting things that happened in this episode. We got a plot that's moving too slowly here. I love this show. I'm not trying to be overly critical, but I think we got a plot that's moving a little too slowly. I mean, think about it. No ball has really been advanced down the field on a single plot point yet this entire season. Khaleesi's in captivity. We knew that. Jon Snow is coming back to life. We knew that. King's Landing's about to pop off. We knew that. Still hasn't. Arya's about to become an assassin. Still hasn't. It's getting closer. I'm just wanting it to move a little faster. I want more of the characters that I like doing things, not stuck on the way to doing things. Like, for example, there's a scene in this episode where Tyrion is sitting at a table with Translator Hadi and Grey Worm. The entire scene is spent discussing that they've got nothing to talk about. Like, no topic is actually chosen. No conclusion is actually reached. It was kind of a waste of a scene. You got two semi-interesting characters and the single most interesting character in the entire series, and 4 minutes is spent on them doing nothing, failing to advance any plot. They were just killing time until Varys got in the room. And that's, I think, emblematic of what the season has been so far. It's just a lot of killing time. Like, let's kill more people. Let's have more things happen. All right, so that's the only criticism that I have. Let's get back to the plot, because then we move to the best scene of the entire episode. You have young Ned Stark in a flashback in a sword fight with a character we have heard of way in the past called the Sword of the Morning. He's like one of the great sword fighters in all of Westeros. So it's the second flashback to young Ned this season. And he is there, and there's some hubbub about the Mad King Rhaegar and the kidnapping of his sister. You can see how this plot point is starting to develop, and we're going to get an awful lot of it soon here. But the Sword of the Morning is absolutely, like, no joke. He's out there twirling two swords like the leader of the homecoming parade twirls two batons. I mean, this guy is an amazing sword fighter. He cuts everybody up, and historically, it's always been known that Ned won this fight. So the story goes anyways. Just Ned won the fight, but then we get the reality. Ned gets a needed assist on the kill from a not-dead-yet guy who comes and stabs the Morning Sword of the Morning, whatever, in the back of the head, which even Bran was like, ooh, foul play right there. You know, Bran, who's watching this, is the Third Eye Raven. He's there with Max von Sydow, and he wants to see more. The father, Ned, is about to charge up the tower. Maybe that's where his sister is. We still don't know. We'll learn more, I guess. And Max von Sydow says when they go back under the tree, because he had to snap him out of the flashback, because if you stay in the flashback, you get stuck there too long, apparently. He says, before you leave the tree, you must learn. Learn what? He says, learn everything. So, a lot of mental gobbledygook going on with Brand. We then go all the way across the narrow seas. We catch up with Khaleesi, who gets hauled back to the Dothraki tent city. She's put in the old women's home, where their tradition says any widow of a Khal must go live in the same retirement home. Khaleesi is stripped naked, but there's actually no nudity, because she has a no nudity clause in season 2. So that's kind of a total jip right there, if you ask me. No nudity in this episode. Boo. Come on, Game of Thrones. It's HBO. Let her rip. Let's see. So the old Dothraki Khaleesi leader woman, let's call her Khloe Kardashian without makeup. Khloe Kardashian without makeup says that a vote must be taken to see if she'll even be permitted to live there, because she wandered after Khal Drogo's death. And again, I feel like we're kind of stuck. We got one of our favorite characters stuck in a plot point that I really don't care about. I don't care about the retired Khaleesi home for women. I don't care about it. Get her back with Tyrion and some dragons, and get her back with hot translator girl. Get her back with Varys, who just came to the party. And that's where the episode shifts to Varys, who's interrogating the woman who helps the harpies. And he's great. He's always a wordsmith. He gives good monologue, if you will. It's a good scene. He says, I know who you are. I know what you've done. And, you know, she's right when she says, look, you're foreign soldiers with a foreign queen. They feel like a trodden people. He threatens her and her kid in a very classy, subtle way, and gets the information that he needs. Basically, the information is they can't hold Meereen, they can't hold Yunkai, they can't hold Slaver's Bay, and all of the rich people that they kind of destroyed to claim the land are starting a, like, black ops war against them. And they really can't fight it on three fronts. So they're losing control of the city of Meereen. And that's kind of where we are right there. Tyrion says he wants to send ravens to everybody. And that's where we leave that scene. Meanwhile, you got Cersei. She's with her creepy maester. He's trying to recruit little kids to be his spy network. They were the old little birds from Varys the Sparrow. And so he's trying to get a little spy network going. We got Sir Gregor Clegane, Mountain 2.0. He scares them away. Cersei wants to know if anyone is out there talking about her, her family. Like, don't put my name in the wind. Basically one of those moments. Becky with the good hair. You got to walk a shame. She doesn't want to hear about it. And if anybody talks about it, she's going to go DEFCON 1 on all of them. We then cut to maybe the single best scene of the episode, other than the Ned Stark sword fight flashback. You got old Maester Pyzel in the small council talking smack about the Mountain 2.0 as the Mountain 2.0 walks in the room with Cersei and Jaime Lannister. You've got awesome Tyrell grandma on the small council. You got a Lannister uncle that we hardly know or care about. Cersei and Jaime crashed a small council meeting, and it's obvious they aren't welcome. They get up and leave Jaime and Cersei sitting there. We go then to King Tommen, who's in the Red Keep, where the Sparrow says Cersei still hasn't fully atoned, even though she did her walk of shame. He's trying to toughen up, but the Sparrow's got like this disarming, religious muckety-muck, talks about how good can come from atonement, and it's tough to tell if Tommen is setting him up for the downfall or if he's talking Tommen out of being tough. I guess we'll find out in another episode. We then cut back to just a character that officially needs more done to her because she's so interesting. Arya, we almost get a training montage. I called last week for training montage. You need a training montage. We kind of get a training montage, but it's really more of her just being beaten with a stick as she's asked questions about herself, where she has to deny anyone's identity, even her own. You know, a girl has no name, and so on and so forth. So she's back at the House of Black and White, pardon me. She says that she's no one. She proves it again. She sips from the fountain that normally kills people, doesn't kill her. She gets her sight back, and hopefully now she's officially ready to go out and be an assassin badass. Like, I'm dying for that to happen. Her story has been on pause pretty much since she left the Hound to die on the side of a mountain 2 seasons ago. She's been in the, you know, House of Black and White, just, you know, getting the poop end of the stick. Nothing's really happening. Hopefully something really happens with her. It's time. It's time. She gives her a new list, by the way. Her list is Cersei Lannister, Gregor Clegane, Mountain 2.0, Waldo Frey, and there's no other names on the list. And then she says, whoever you want on the list. So she's ready to kill just about anybody now. Let's have her do it. We cut back to Winterfell. Young Ramsay sitting at a table with a young Karstark, who is an auxiliary character from like season 2 when Ned cut off an old Karstark's head and they left and he didn't have an army and Waldo Frey did him right before the Red Wedding. So, yeah, Rob Stark, pardon me. So anyways, he's talking to another real northerner who isn't about to bow or isn't about to genuflect to young Ramsay. And it's kind of funny. You know, he's just old school. Like the northerners are clearly the rednecks of Westeros. And this guy's not about to let anybody play a banjo for him. He then says, I want your protection, and I'm not going to kiss your rear end for it. I got a gift for you. And he busts out old wilding nanny, weird, kind of sexy, kind of not chick, and a young Rincon Stark. So Ramsay, after losing the Sansa, has another Stark now in his possession as he tries to keep Winterfell. And then we finally, the episode ends, going back to Castle Black. You got Jon Snow hanging his murderers dead. He gives the Night's Watch cloak back to his buddy there, and he walks out saying, my watch is ended. In other words, Jon Snow gave his life to the Night's Watch, as he pledged to. He had a million different temptations to walk away from that pledge in all the seasons leading up to his death. And now that he has died, he has officially served his life for the Night's Watch, and he can kind of walk away like good. Like he filled his deal. You're a Night's Watchman until you die. Okay, I died. So he can leave now and go out and do other things, and that's good because it's officially time for Game of Thrones to let people start doing other things than wrapping up or remaining stuck in plot points we all kind of know about. So, I love you, Game of Thrones. But let's go. Come on. Moving on down the ball. Matriculate your story down the field. kind of feels like they're off book. Kind of feels like they're scratching for what's next because it's not given to them this time around. Guy hasn't written the books yet. Maybe this is all George R.R. Martin's fault. Anyways, there you go. That is post Game of Thrones. I hope you enjoyed it. Obviously, there's an awful lot happening tonight. There's an awful lot happening tonight. Like I said, I'm not on due to the fact that the A's are at the Red Sox. It's always cool to play at Fenway, and it's sunny gray day. So hopefully it's a good day for the Oakland A's. Stay hot, Josh Reddick. I saw he kind of caught fire over the weekend. Hopefully he can keep that up. Giants had the first of three with the Toronto Blue Jays. It has been brutal for Jake Peavy. Peavy goes tonight. We'll see if he can get anything back to looking halfway decent against a really tough Toronto lineup. Timmy's showcase, by the way, went well over the weekend, although he's not being measured for another uniform just yet. So we'll see what happens after Lincecum had his highly anticipated showcase over the weekend. Tonight, of course, the Sharks can close out the Predators on the road tonight in Game 6. If they lose, they're going to have so much pressure on them back home in Game 7. I think it's got how about this? It's tonight or not at all for the Sharks. That's how poorly they play historically with big pressure at home. So tonight or not at all, let's go Sharks. Hopefully you get it done. And then, of course, you got the main event. Warriors are at the Blazers. It is Game 4. Curry named MVP today. At least that's what his wife said anyways. He's been upgraded to questionable. I'd still wait till Game 5. I really would. Wednesday back at Oracle would be the right time to take the tarp off him. Even if maybe he's not even ready then. You know, we're assuming that he's just going to be ready to go. So be patient. You got a little chance to play with some house money. Big game tonight, though. Very big game tonight for the Warriors. Big night for Klay. Big night for Draymond. Green played well in Game 3. Played great in Game 3, actually. The Blazers just got the best of them. I mean, they really did. And you got the best of the Blazers in that Game 3. Dame Lillard was fantastic. A win tonight would make the path as least stressful as possible for the Warriors, and that's what we're all kind of hoping for. By the way, nice of the Thunder. They did the Warriors a solid by evening their series with the Spurs at 2 games each with a big win at home. So there you go. I think that's really all you need for today, and hopefully you feel the same way about it. Thanks very much for tuning in to the Rare Damon Bruce Show podcast, and enjoy the rest of your week. We'll be back live on Thursday. Until then, remember, winter is coming, and sports don't build character, they reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.